thanks for inviting me to do this. I came Crazy Talks for the first time last month, and that's because I've been wanting to come for ages, but I'm always doing something the night before, and I'm always too tired. Because it's one of the things that I live with, that I have to manage my energy, having too many nights out in a row. So it's just exhausting for me. I used to be able to do it all the time. I used to be able to get through months with hardly any sleep. So I'm 54 years old this year, and I can't do it anymore. I actually quite like it. But sometimes it means you can't do as much as you want to do. So that's been part of my learning. Right, so yeah, I hear voices. Have done ever since I was about 6 years old. A lot of it's good for me, and it is. See a bit more about that. There's a sort of myth that all voice hearing experiences are difficult. It's just not true. It's actually really common. We'll talk, see a bit more about that later. These are the only qualifications I claim, and this is stolen or borrowed. At least. Can you read that at all? And there's a lie in it. It's not quite true as well, because it wasn't kindergarten, it was senior school. I was 12 years old when that happened. And that's part of my story of why some of my voice hearing experiences is difficult. And there's a key in that as well. So I'm just going to talk a bit about the Hearing Voices Network, which is kind of an amorphous thing. But it's 30 years old this year. There's a slide coming up. Next one. 30 years, 35 countries, 5 continents. How about that?
Wow.
I think it was just last year or the year before when Brazil joined in. So that was South America for the first time, as far as I know. Some of my friends were down there helping them get started with some stuff. I got invited to go actually, but it was really cool. But we were all working on the assumption that I didn't need a visa. But because I'm British, living in Canada, I'm a landed immigrant, because I'm British and living here, I needed a visa. Had I been in Britain, I wouldn't have needed a visa. Had I been Canadian, I wouldn't have needed a visa. Had I been going the week before, I wouldn't have needed a visa because of the Olympics. We waived all visa requirements. Because I was going on that day, I needed a visa, and guess what? All the consulate staff from Brazilian consuls all around the world were on strike. So we tried, but we couldn't make it work. It was frustrating. So maybe next time. I don't know which way to ask this. Who has seen Eleanor Lombring's TED Talk? One or two or three of you. So who hasn't seen it? Okay. Maybe there's time to show it. It's 15 minutes long, so that's a significant chunk of time, so maybe we'll leave it till the end. But this is a direct quote from her. It's about 4 years ago now she did it in front of an audience of 2,000 people. Last time I linked was a few months ago to being watched nearly 10 million times, so a lot of people have seen it. And it's probably the first time we've broken through to a larger audience. Yeah. I've taken this sentence directly from that talk, kind of as my mission statement of what we're trying to do, at least here in Toronto. Can you all read it? Somebody want to read it out?
We envision ANINAC, a society that understands voice hearing. Supports the need of individuals to hear voices and views them as full citizens. This type of society is not only possible, but is already on its way.
What does that say to you?
We're getting somewhere.
Yeah, I get that. It's actually happening. This is why I like it. We're not just coming up with an idea, we're actually doing it already. Have been doing it for 30 years. We don't need to wait for somebody we can call they to do it for us. We can do it. That's why I like it. She goes on to talk about Chavez and all kinds of things. There's a lot of people, and she's one and I'm one, we say things like, I say it this way, hearing voices has got nothing to do with mental health. Nothing to do with mental health. It's more of it's a social movement. It's a human rights movement, like lots of others. She says it here really well. Lots of us get treated quite badly because of how we're different from everybody else.
Yeah.
And it sucks. So it's part of that big tradition. And I was talking with the people in the US, because Hearing Voices Congress now happens every year, and this year it's in the US, it's in the States, in Boston, in August. So I was talking to one of the organizers today about, and I can't share it, but what the way they're framing that one and the topic and the subject is about the bigger idea of all of these social movements, how we're all connected, and how Hearing Voices is, you know, sits within them. So there's a lot of us view it that way. What I say is that Hearing Voices is really a bunch of cool people around the world doing cool stuff. Because it is. Little plug for Intervoice. Intervoice, everybody thinks Intervoice is kind of this big organization that's in charge of everybody. This is just Congress from a few years ago, so there's a lot of people in the same room. This is, there might be members of Intervoice. I'm a member of Intervoice. You can join, anybody can. There's different scales and rates. I pay, I think it's $15 a year. So it can be quite cheap if you're interested. Intervoice is a charity. They're based in the UK. That's just because of the story where it started. And they're just really like a coordinating body. And they set some values and things like that, so they articulate some stuff. They also have a research committee, things like that. And so they do some stuff. This is Dirk Kirstens, who was the chair up until a few months ago. He's now the vice chair. Rachel Waddingham, who's a voice hearer, person who hears voices, she's now the chair. She's very cool, doing some really cool stuff. Done a lot of work with youth and in prisons. And I learned, when I met her for the first time in Boston, I learned that she's run a Hearing Voices group, not only in the hospital, in the wards, but in the ECT suite with the ECT machine in the corner. She says, I wouldn't do it again, but we did it. this is sort of the face of it in Toronto, that's a website. Some of the things that we do trainings. We have a Hearing Voices group that's been running for 6.5 years now, which just shows you how new this is. We're actually one of the longest running groups in North America, 6 years. By no means the longest. We're actually the second longest running group in Canada. Started in Quebec, I'm not quite sure where, in France, a few years before we did. I was in Montreal in November. In Montreal, they have 10 or 11 Hearing Voices groups run by services, sometimes in hospitals and, you know, in like charitable organizations. We started working together. Talk a bit more about that later. Another thing we do, the Hearing Voices Cafe, that's a brand new thing. We just sort of stumbled into that. Happens every month. Happened last night. It's the first Monday of every month, except when it's not the first Monday, it's the second Monday, because of holidays and things like that. We did it last night. A place called Coffee and All That Jazz on Roncesvalles. Or just off Roncesvalles. we'll talk about it. So, just a quick, I'll do it now. Difference between our Hearing Voices group and our Hearing Voices Cafe. The group is private and for people who have those experiences and struggle, but also for people who are supporting somebody specifically, not just interested, but supporting somebody maybe in their family. The Hearing Voices Cafe is for everybody. And we meet in a cafe. Part of the premise of the Hearing Voices Cafe is that we can talk about this stuff in ordinary places, so we do. Something else I get involved in, I think this is on the back page of Mad Times, yeah? Who's been to Mad X? Okay, well, your next opportunity is on Friday the 17th. And if you want to do a stint on stage, you can do, because we've got some slots. It's fun. It's downtown at the Imperial Pub. It's a party, Friday night party.
Sorry, what date was that?
Friday the 17th, February. So 2 weeks on Friday.
Dundas and
Dundas. Dundas and Dundas. It's the back end of, I was going to say the arse end there, but it's the back end of Dundas.
Okay.
Everybody knows the Imperial. That's a story I got. I've been in Toronto 14 years this year. Alright, why do we use these words? What do we mean by Hearing Voices? It's really quite simple. It's about claiming language as our own. It's about naming our experience in our own words. And it's about using simple words and talking about the experience, not about a category that you can pull that experience into. That's all it is. We use the term Hearing Voices. It includes everything, all kinds of experiences, as I like to say, that get called names like psychosis. We talk about Hearing Voices because it's the most common. It's also the one it seems that people are most scared of. And this is the difference. This is just a sort of caption from a four-page definition of what hallucination is. And it goes off into all kinds of things. It just ties itself in knots and just means nothing. I just realized I had this on the timer for a longer talk. I'm just going to keep kicking me in the butt. We just say, hey, I hear voices that I think you don't hear, because I don't know what you hear unless you tell me. Here's an example. Lots of writers quite open about their experience. Yeah, this is Ray Bradbury. Somebody want to read it out?
Many people hear voices when no one is there. Some of them are called mad and are shut up in rooms where they stare at the walls all day.
There you go.
Others are called writers, and they do pretty much the same thing. Ray Bradbury.
Kind of cool. Who's fun? He had lots to say about it. I heard him say this, and I found a nice picture. It just struck me as a powerful thing. It's like, yeah, that is what's happening. So part of what I do is, like, let's reclaim the word normal. Everything's normal as far as I'm concerned. What happens is normal. Dumb. There's a lot about how words are imposed upon us, especially some words. How we have our experiences defined for us. Anybody know who Dr. Robin Smith is? I have no idea, but he said this on Oprah, so he must be right. It was an excuse to use the robot from one of my favourite movies. So. But that is how it works. Yeah. Next one. I'm right, you're wrong, I'm big, you're small, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's how it works. That's from Matilda. Anybody been watching Mr. Robot? You're missing out. This is from series 2.
British thing?
No, it's American. Mm. Control is about as real as a one-legged unicorn taking a leak at the end of a door rainbow. Real is just a... I was having a conversation today about real, and it's just really not a useful concept. Especially when you're talking about this kind of thing. And it's one of the ways we have our experience denied. That's not real. Which is why we say... I was going to show him a t-shirt, but I don't have the right one on. The voices are real. It's the best thing you can say to anybody who hears voices. Because they've always heard the opposite. They've always heard. This is a bit like the writing one. I used to deliver papers when I was 13, 14. That's when I discovered Hunter S. Thompson. Because one of the houses I delivered papers to had a Rolling Stone. Stay with me ever since. This real stuff is just... Lots of quantum physicists have a lot to say about it. My voices love it. My voices... It's Dave that says it. I am best understood as a quantum phenomenon. What he means by that is, as soon as you think you've got him figured out, he's going to change into something else. First I'm a wave, now I'm a particle. This is Joseph Campbell. Reality is a word, and you're not supposed to use it. It's just a word, and you're not supposed to use it without quotation marks around it. It's just an idea. John Lennon. That one's really cool. And so, basically, it's a story. What we're living with is a story that's been made up that tries to explain what's wrong with it. Bollocks. And it's time. And it limits us. Somebody want to read this one out?
To be human is to be free. To be free is to make choices for yourself. The main thing that precludes us from making choices are the myths and stories that we tell ourselves, and the myths and stories that we tell each other.
This is Simone de Beauvoir.
Oh, she's cool.
Very cool.
Jean-Paul Sartre's wife. Yeah.
This is Marius Rom, how he talks about it, specifically about voices. Many voices can be unthreatening and even positive, actually most are. It's wrong to turn this into a shameful problem that people either feel they have to deny or to take medication to suppress. If that's your choice, it's fine. This is a guy, Jim Van Os, where he talks about the schizo stereotype. Because one of the things is, if I say I hear voices, the story we've been told is that that must mean I have one of these. illnesses. It's just not true. Because even in the diagnostic manual, there are at least another 49 diagnoses where hearing voices is a diagnostic feature, including being perfectly healthy. The human experience. I got interested in this one and the next one actually, diagnosis and prescription. This is what the meaning of the word is, at least the original meaning of the word, the etymology, rather than what you find in a current dictionary. Because, of course, if you look at a current dictionary, it's about medical diagnosis. Paulo Freire talking about prescription. One of the basic elements of the relationship between the oppressor and the oppressed is prescription. One person telling another what they must do. Really, really interesting. We do it all the time. One of the things that drove me nuts is just how common here in North America you say the word should. You should do that, you should do that, I should do that. Where I come from, the only appropriate response to that is, you should fuck right off. I've been reading Frantz Fanon the last year or so, and he's awesome. He's just fucking awesome, the way he talks about these kinds of things. And this is I've changed the word there because it makes it easier for me to understand. He talks about the zone of non-being, which is deeper than this. It's still difficult for me to grasp all of that. So it's the humans, and when we cast somebody into the zone of non-being, it makes it okay to do whatever we need to do to them. That's what we do, in all kinds of ways. Some people credit me with saying this. I'm pretty sure I picked it up somewhere else. So, if you hear voices, that does not necessarily mean you are ill. But if it leads you to becoming isolated and alone, then that can certainly lead to you becoming very angry. It can be really difficult. We'll come to that in a bit. Just going to hold it there a minute. For me, it's the fact that we make people deal with this by themselves is what makes it really difficult. And what we found in the Hearing Voices movement is, paradoxically, talking about it is probably the best thing you can do.
True.
And it's relatively easy to do that as long as you can find somebody who knows how to listen. Which sadly often means somebody who doesn't work in the mental health system and has been trained not to listen. Anybody seen the movie Healing Voices? Organise a showing. It's a cool movie, made in the US. It's healing, not hearing, yeah? This is Robert Whittaker talking in that. Here's the problem. We fear those who go into, say, psychotic states or other states. And because we fear them, we don't listen. And because we don't listen, we tend to hurt them. What we're really treating is our own desire to be safe. Oh, you've got that bang on. Yeah, this is Dave again. Dave likes making memes on the internet. Oops. Oh, going the wrong way, sorry. Somebody want to read that one? Oh. Sorry, Flip. I've got itchy fingers.
When we reduce our understanding of human struggles to a problem of brain chemicals, we reduce ourselves to fiddling around with chemicals. Dave Umbongo.
I think humans are really funny. As in strange. Sometimes it's like having an alien following me around making observations about the ridiculousness of humanity. This one's a bit complex. I'm just going to focus on the first stage here. We tend to view voices as the problem. Whether we are trying to support somebody, and this is a really difficult thing to do, it makes it look easy here on the slide. But shifting from there to seeing the voice as a part of my experience of the world, so part of my experience of struggling in the world, this is a key step. So if you are working with somebody or just trying to, are you living with somebody? You're struggling with voices, try and make that step for yourself in terms of how you understand what they're about. Because once you do this one, the next ones come easy. Just part of the human experience. So wherever I'm, if something's part of my experience, if my experience is good, that side of it's going to be good. If my experience is good, so I think of my voices nowadays as like an amplifier. Times are good, they make it better. If times are bad, they make it look simple as that. Can't remember what that one is. That was from a friend. This is from Intervoice. So this is the kind of thing that they do. Sort of set things out like this. Intervoice has been around about 25 years. reads, hearing voices is a normal, though unusual, and personal variation of human experience. I'm not convinced about the unusual. I think it's actually bloody usual. Hearing voices make sense in relation with personal life experiences. Always, always, always. As long as we can listen long enough and closely enough, it always makes sense. The problem is not hearing voices, but the difficulty to cope with the experience. Comes from Holland, so this is a translation, but it's the difficulty the person is having coping with the experience. There's a real clue in this, because this is where we do the work. How do we learn to cope? That's where most people start. People who hear voices can learn to cope with these experiences by accepting and owning their voices. In that language, it sounds like it's being pushed on you. That is not the way it's meant. It's a choice always. But it's about possibility. And again, it's about where is the work that we can do. It's not about fixing it. It's about taking charge of our own experience. And then the last one, this is the bigger societal one. So these are very personal. And the big ones at the end are society. A positive attitude by society and its members towards people hearing voices increases acceptance of both voices and people who hear voices. And then discrimination and excluding of people who hear voices must end. So that's the big step. I'm going to come back to this one. This is a short movie. So who hears voices? Quick run through. So numbers. Between 4% and 15% of everybody hears voices on a regular basis. So about as common as left-handedness. Turn that into numbers. It's somewhere between 300 million and 1,200 million people. As I like to say, if we were a country, we would be the third or fourth biggest. If we were a religion, we would be the third or fourth biggest. That's how many people there is. That's everybody. About two-thirds of that, it's okay. People are okay. 22% of young people. There's a lot of research been done around now, lately. This is a 50 different diagnosis. 50% of people in a long-term marriage will hear or see or otherwise sense the presence of their spouse after they've died. That one's really common. Links with, well, this is my favourite. 58% of medical students in Spain's top medical school said, I've heard a voice. Nobody else heard. It's practically a qualification for becoming a doctor. Three in four of us will have at least one voice hearing experience in our lives. It's usually around a significant life event like loss of a loved one. And it's usually welcomed. We broaden it into all kinds of stuff that gets called psychosis. A third of Brits are paranoid. This is Jim Van Os again. He's got a really cool TED talk. There's how many people. Here's a key. I'm going to sort of finish around here. So what's the difference? Why does some people do really struggle, but what's the difference? And it's about this. Two-thirds of people are okay with their experience, or have learned to be okay, or even find it beneficial. There's about a third who do struggle. So what's the difference? It's this. Somebody want to read it?
A key factor in the difference between people who hear voices and are okay with their experience and those people who struggle, believe that voices have power over them.
And the more we isolate them and the more we call them names, the more easy it is to believe that the voices have power over them. We lock them into that power. It's kind of how it works. Well, I'll show you this one as you've tantalized it. This is just from one study. 60% of people taking medications will say they don't work. Yeah, not helped by medications. Probably because they're told the medications will make the voices go away, and that's not quite what they do. So let's talk about the history. Started off in the Netherlands. Psychiatrist Marius Rom and his client patient, Patsy Harger. She'd been working with him for a number of years, and one day she'd been reading a book, and she said, Dr. Marius, how is it that when you go to church on a Sunday morning and you talk to God, you pray to God, that's considered normal. But when I come here on a Wednesday afternoon and say to you that God talks to me, that means I'm crazy. Doesn't make sense. So he said, yeah, you're right, it doesn't make sense. So they started working together. So they went on a local cable TV show talking about this, and they had a couple of other people talking about their experience. And then they asked people to write in and phone in and stuff. And they had a few hundred people writing in and phoning in. And that's where they started to find out that for the first time, really anybody put any numbers to it, that two-thirds of people hear voices are okay with it. So that's when it started to look up. Maybe there's something we can learn from those people who have these experiences and are okay. It might be helpful for those people who struggle. And that's what it's about. That's where it started, and that's what it's about. Here in Canada, I mentioned Congress, annual Congress in Boston in August. I'm going to come along. I went to Boston for the first time last year. It's a great city. I'm really looking forward to going back and being part of Congress. People will come from all over the world. There's a very good prospect that in 2 years, 2019, Congress will come to Canada. It will be in Montreal. We started to work together and plan towards that. Figure out how do we make that a cool thing. Also, I'm part of another group. It's a growing, fledgling, sort of a painful group at the moment. I went to their conference in Boston, which is why I was there, and spoke as experts by experience, which is actually a language that comes from Holland, the same as being a Voices Network. And we have a group here in Toronto. You can join. Currently, so there's a big international group, and then there's a US version. So and the WAT one's really about activism, getting together in communities. So I joined that one. So that means we've got a branch here in Toronto, and I'm sort of coordinator for that branch, which means I get the list of how many people there are in Canada as members of that organization. Currently, we have 12. There's three of us here in Toronto. So we've started to do things. How can we use that organization to help? So they have an annual conference too, so we're looking at bringing that here. And our idea that we're trying to make work, we just started talking about it, is that we will have an ISBS conference here in Toronto. And then we'll have the Hearing Voices Congress in Montreal, very close together. Try and bring a lot of people together around some cool ideas. So that's what we're working towards. We had a breakthrough in the last couple of months. We start on Monday on a fairly small project. We've been running trainings here in Toronto, open trainings, and people come along. We're trying to share that now elsewhere. Starting on Monday in Durham region, through CMHA Durham region, we're doing that training out there. It's being funded by money from the LIN. So that's the first time we've actually done that. And we found out just this morning that at least one manager in the LIN is really interested in that project and really backing it. And they're coming along to the training. So that's a good step. Because it's gone on CMHA's national website, just in the last 2 days, we started to get lots of emails and phone calls. People are interested around it. So something, let's see, might amount to nothing. But that's sparked some interest. It's the first time we've gotten some money to do something. It's only small, but it's the first step, and we know what the next two steps are. And that's out in Durham region, where it's actually a little bit easier to get people to agree to do things than it is here in Toronto. And again, I was Skyping with somebody today about taking that same training to Montreal. So that's Montreal and Toronto connecting the two solitudes, which is kind of action. So bringing people together. They've been doing some good stuff, different to what we've been doing, so we can pull that together. That's about it. I'm done. Yeah. I've got a couple of